Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas. If you've stuck with us all year and watched this rubbish, then thank you so much. I do appreciate it. This will be the last photo show up until the 6th of January, so make the most. And we've got a pile of questions here. I'm trying to clear the boards of questions before we get to the end of the year. So get them in for the new year, eh? When you've got all your new kit over Christmas, and we'll try and get them answered for you. If you'd like to leave us a review, always please leave us a review on iTunes. It would be great. Or even if you just refresh your old reviews, that would be great as well. And if you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. So let's, no further ado, get straight into it with the news. First story then is that the Architectural Awards Art of Photography finalists have been announced. There are 15 finalists. This is one of them. This is a control room in an energy place or something like that, which looks fantastic. It's been really, really well shot. These are all images that have been submitted by the people for their portfolio for the Architectural Awards. And the judges are supposedly looking for a good symmetry, good composition, and interest in the photos. There's quite a few that are in there. The 15 images that have been submitted have all been shown on the BBC website. There's a link in the show notes. If you want the show notes, then you can get them on the posting on the BTN site. That one I'm less convinced by. That's just like a monolith in the middle next to the sea. This one, I really love that image. That's like the Flatiron Building in New York, with a hell of a hoolie blowing some snow around it. I think that's been beautifully captured. And it was interesting, that's cropped up as well in another awards ceremony as well that's been going off in the last few weeks. St. Louis Arch or something like that, perhaps. I don't know what that is there. And another good one. There's some lovely, lovely stuff here. The thing that strikes me, and it's the lesson I always try and give to people if they talk to me, is about exposure. And you set your exposure before you apply your effect, okay? So if you look at all of these, the exposures have been set first, and then effects have been applied afterwards. All of these images, pretty much all of them anyway, are correctly exposed. And those that I think are a touch underexposed are probably underexposed just to save some of the whites from blowing out. Generally speaking, they are beautifully shot images, lovely compositions. I've been very careful not to crop them here so that they don't appear too wildly out of focus or out of proportion to what the original person intended. And this one I absolutely adore. That's my favourite. That is Wind Farm sales, but they've been done like they're dandelions. It's a multiple exposure, I would guess, but there's certainly some tilt shifting gone on there with the lens. I think that's a fantastic image. If that doesn't win, it's a travesty, because I think that is brilliant, brilliant photo manipulation. Okay, purists might say it's not a straight shot, but fair enough. Muller said, not worry, I can edit. Thanks, mate. Relaunch has created something that's rather unique, rather special, rather interesting, and at first I dismissed this out of hand, but I'm not so sure anymore. What they're doing is they're issuing leather-clad cameras. They come in, you can see this is clearly a design arty type thing. They come completely encased in a leather pouch. You can cut them open if you want, but the problem you've got is you do not own the camera. So Relaunch's service is to send you a camera, and it's got a 4G card in it, and it's also got nothing more on it than a power switch and a shutter button. Simple. You take the camera and you look through the viewfinder. It's a very simple viewfinder. It's actually a Samsung NX camera underneath. And you point it at whatever you want to point it at, and you take a picture. The 4G card then sends the image up to the servers of Relaunch. They will then crop or edit or do anything that they can to enhance your image, and they will send it back to you in email the following morning. So you sit and you shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot, and at 9 a.m. the following day, all of your images will come back to you in an email. Whether it's via download link or not, I don't know. Does it do a good job? Well, there's a couple of images that have gone up that I've had a look at. This is the only one that was a comparison image where you saw a standard shot and then what it would have looked like with Relaunch having a go at it. And they have significantly improved it. It's not overly HDR'd. The ranges are pretty good, and the highlights are nice, and it looks like they've done a good job of supporting that. How much is it going to cost you? Well, this is the rub, because it's going to cost you £1,200 a year. So you are paying £1,200 for the leasing of this camera and the retouching of all your photos every single day that you do it. There is no limit. So you can take unlimited numbers of photos, and the following morning at 9 a.m. you will get them back. And there was a bit of that that made me think, hang on, that would be pretty good. If they actually do this, I'm paying £1,200 a year as a business, which I can reclaim. I can shoot with this camera and then I get all the images touched back. There's limitations with it, but the services, it's got me thinking. You never own the camera. The camera is not yours. You do not get to keep it. And at the end, when you don't pay your service, you are required to return the camera to them. So would you buy it? There's the question. For £1,200 a year, every image that you take, no matter how many you take, will come back to you perfectly touched. And here's the best bit. At the end of the month, you will get a photo book with all of the photos in that you've taken that month. Now, I think that's not a bad service. I don't know what anyone else thinks. Muller, would you buy it?
Yeah, it's too rich for me.
Bit too rich for you. But it's £1,200 a year, though. It's not a month.
It's a considerable amount of my income.
Yeah, okay. But I just thought it was interesting. Certainly from a commercial viewpoint, I just wouldn't trust what they're doing with the photos. That's the only thing, because you don't get to keep your originals. That would be the negative. Yeah. But it was interesting. Bronwyn says, not bad for what you're getting. Muller says in the chat room, too rich for him. I think that's quite interesting. As I said, initially I dismissed that completely out of hand. But after I thought about it logically, I thought, you know, that's actually not bad. You get a photo book at the end of it. You know, they're £20, £30 a go. And it's unlimited, unlimited photos. Watch this space. Hopefully they'll come out one commercially soon. I can just upload all my Canon stuff and they can get on with it. Next story. A man has posted a picture in the New York Times that he altered slightly and all hell has broken loose. This is a guy called Justin T. Gellison. And in the New York Times, this was a picture that appeared. Now that is a picture of, I've got to get this right, the filing cabinet that was broken into during the Watergate scandal. Apparently at the moment that is held at the Democratic National Committee headquarters, and it sits next to the servers that were allegedly hacked by the Russians during the presidential campaign to get Hillary's emails and stuff like that, I think. Now, he went to take a picture of it. He was given permission to take a picture of it, and he took the picture of it. And the original picture that he took of it had an unfortunate amount of glare on it. You can see it there just reflecting off the wall, which didn't work. Now, a lot of people said, OK, you could Photoshop that out. But there is a code of conduct that he's got to go along with, which says that he shouldn't have done that. The National Press Photographers Association Code of Ethics. What was happening was the light was coming in from the window behind him and it was bouncing off a portrait that was hung above. And the portrait is actually the portrait image is actually a picture of the newspaper of the day, the Washington Post, showing the Watergate break-in. So it's kind of associated with the filing cabinet. So in order to try and make it look better, all he did was take the image down, because that cut the reflection down and allowed the black wall to be black. Simple as that. That's all he's done, right? There's no Photoshop that's gone on in this image. None whatsoever. All the guy has done is, in the room where he's shooting the picture, taken down a source of glare. And the crap has hit the fan. Because he's altered the image according to the National Press Photographers Association guidelines. They immediately published a retraction for it and an apology as well, and the editor's note said, an earlier version of the main photograph in this article of a filing cabinet and computer at the Democratic National Committee headquarters should not have been published. The photographer had removed a framed image from the wall over the filing cabinet showing a Washington Post Watergate front page because it was causing glare within the lighting. The new version shows the scene as it would normally appear with the framed newspaper page in place. I don't know how I feel about that kind of stuff, because I think he's done nothing wrong there. I think he's done nothing wrong at all. He has not substantially altered the image so that it conveys anything different than what was already there. And that's the guidelines that really they're talking about. You shouldn't be altering things to convey a different or create a story that wasn't evident at the time. This will rumble on for a long time, I think, but I think the guidelines for that have got a bit silly myself. Do you remember this image? This was shot by a guy called, and I can't find his name, Steve Back, that's it. Steve Back shot this. These are the arms of Julia Dockrell, who is holding on to government plans for Brexit. And because of the fact that Steve's shooting with a rather large lens and a really high detail camera, he's managed to capture absolutely every single one of those apart from where her arm is. And you can probably work out most of those. Now, you'd have thought, well, hang on, this is just one of those press photographer things where they've taken advantage of a junior girl and she's got in trouble for it and they shouldn't have published it. Apparently, Steve actually shouted out to Mark Field, the MP who was just ahead of her, that they should all cover their documents, and the photographers were repeatedly warning them to cover their documents. Also in Downing Street, apparently, as you walk down Downing Street, there are a whole pile of signs that say, watch out for any documents that you've left on show. Please make sure that you cover them up. And this lady, I can't remember her name now. It's got Julia Dockrell, there we go. And Mark Field didn't do that, and the picture was taken, and it was published. So I'm a flurry. I got absolutely no sympathy for it. A company has released a program which is supposedly the first artificial intelligence for creating stunning images. It's called Photo Lima, and it's Lima as in the Lima monkey type thing. And it's version 1.0 is out there at the moment. You can go and buy it if you want. It's reduced from $49 to $29. And allegedly, this is the first AI of photo enhancement that you can get. So you put your images in, and Photo Lima sits and churns through it and runs an algorithm, and then comes back with some images that it says are significantly better. I've had a play with it. I got a trial version, and I don't like it very much, I have to say. I think it does artificially bad things to your image. So let me show you an image here. This is one that I shot a few years ago with a girl named Cody when I first moved into the studio here, to try and convey the idea that we could use this for a business conference type thing. She sat in, and that's the picture. Now, that is the picture that was taken out of the raw camera, nothing else. It is just the back of the camera, simple as that. If I put it through Photo Lima, it comes out with this. And what I find quite interesting is that the before image on these, it actually darkens the before image before it shows the after, which kind of gives you the impression that it's doing more than it really actually is. Although the image on the right isn't bad, it's a little bit oversaturated, and it's also got an awful lot of the HDR stuff going in. And if you put the wrong type of image in, this thing goes absolutely ballistic with HDR, and it looks horrific. If you put it into Photos app, and this is a slightly different image, but it was shot in straight afterwards, that does a far better job of enhancement than Photo Lima does. And that's free in the Photos app, the Apple Photos app, simple as that. Would I recommend it? No, I wouldn't. If you want to know what I really think about it, then give me a call and I'll let you know. But so far, it's not going to be on my Christmas list. Just before we finish the news, I want to give a shout out to a lady named Hannah Cousins. She's at Hannah Cousins on Twitter, and she's been doing some lighting stuff on there. Every day she's done a lighting advent calendar where you get a lighting setup that you can copy in your own studio or even in your own lounge. They're all small shots, portrait shots, that kind of stuff. There's nothing massive in there that you need to hire a studio for the day. And in a lot of them as well, I've always said to people, if they say to me, what do you do with lighting? If you're lighting people, you should use one source of light, because people are generally round. So therefore, make them look like cylinders. One source of light will show that, and don't do more. And a lot of her lighting setups are one source of light. So well done, Hannah. Absolutely brilliant. I've enjoyed them, and I've kept them all as well, because I'm sure there's never a time when you can't stop learning. Right, with that then, let's get into the gear, because we've got tons of questions. First thing in the gear is the Rogue Flashbender. This was reviewed at Amateur Photographer, and they gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars, which I thought was pretty impressive. What is it? So effectively, this is a softbox for your flash gun, and it wraps around your flash and it sticks up. It's on like a kind of a sort of frame, I guess. It's a rigid bone type feel frame to it that goes around it. You put it over the top of your flash, you point your flash directly up, and it bounces the light back out. There's no mirror in it, there's no reflector in it as such that does the job. It just gives a soft effect. Benefits of it, it folds completely flat. One of the other benefits of it is it's very flexible. So you've got one here. You can also just have a plain reflector instead of the softbox effect. And the other thing you can do is roll it round, and it's got some press studs that allow you to attach it so it becomes a snoot. So you can point directly at your subject and get very, very stark light and shade from it. I love these kind of things, but I've got to say, the one thing I've always used is that there's a little cap that goes on the end that's the diffuser. I can't, they made them years ago. I've owned it for 20 years, literally. And I just find that enough with my flash and just change the angle on it. It's £39, so I think it's a little bit on the pricey side, but it is good. It is really good from what I've seen. Would I buy it? Yeah, I probably would, if it wasn't for the fact that I've bought a whole load of photo attachments over the years for flash, and all of them have sat in a drawer. I've never used them commercially, because when you go out, it usually adds this huge thing that's up in front of your face, and you look a bit of a dick carrying it around. So mine is just the little kind of diffuser cap that goes on the end of the flash, and I'll sort the rest out when I get into it, or maybe even a cart behind and nothing more. But the Rogue Flash Bender is there. You can have it if you want. Next thing then is the Irix lens. I've never heard of Irix before I read this story, but they've produced a couple of lenses which are rather nice to look at. They're well built by the looks, and they're a Swiss-Korean cooperative to create lenses. There's both 15mm models in f2.4, but the two that you get are the Blackstone and the Firefly. Now the Blackstone weighs in at 600 grams, and that's one of the, it's built on an aluminium chassis so that it's a lot more sturdy and a lot more rugged so that you can use it commercially. The Firefly is exactly the same lens, but it's built on a lighter frame, plain and simple, and it only comes in at 500 grams. It does manual focus only. There is no autofocus on these at all. It's only available for Canon, Nikon and Pentax cameras. And it's £400 for the Firefly and £540 for the Blackstone. It's available on Amazon. They do look lovely quality lenses, I have to say. And some of the images that I saw come out of them are excellent. 0.7 centimeters is the closest focus point for them. So they're really good lenses. Only manual focus though. Would I buy one? Probably not, but they do look nice. I think you've got to remember what they're competing with. There's an awful lot of commercial lenses out there that will go down to 15mm that are a little bit more expensive and an awful lot more versatile, and they've got the autofocus on them. I think there's one that we'll talk about later, the Tamron does a 15mm, 30mm equivalent at f2.28, and that's only 700 quid. So you're, for 200 quid more, you're getting autofocus and a really great lens that, from a provider that's well known. Next one is the Fujifilm X-A10. Now, I got a question this week in the Slack room from Phil, who said, I'm looking at getting another camera. What about this one against the Canon G15? And I said, well, you know, the Canon G15 is great. What do you want out of it that you're not getting from the Canon? He came up with some answers, and he said, but he'd been playing with some interchangeable lens stuff. And then I came across this story for the photo show, and I thought, well, this wouldn't be bad at all, because this is a Micro Four Thirds setup, so that gets him into the lenses. It's £499, so it's not going to break the bank. This is aimed at the definite budget end, but as I said, you know, no end of times. At this end of the camera market, there aren't any bad cameras anymore. Yeah, if you get something from VTech or something like that that's built for your kids to go and shoot out and just stop you annoying you to get hold of your camera while you're on a day out, then yeah, they're rubbish. But you know, if you're dropping £200 on a camera, you can get a decent quality camera that will do just the job for you without too many problems. This is a little bit more expensive than that, but it's a really good camera. It's into the X100s that were released a couple of years ago. It's an APS-C sensor, 16 megapixels. It comes with a 16 to 50mm lens. The ISO range goes from 200 to 6400 in normal shooting modes, and you can push that to 25,600 if you want to. Full HD, it's got 6 film simulation modes, which makes me think it's going to alter your image, which I don't like, but people will use that. There's 10 advanced filters as well, which can be added onto it, and this is kind of cool because it does it in the back end, and it gives you a fisheye effect, a cross-screen effect, toy camera effect, pop color effect, and loads of others. There is also a screen on the back of it, which will tilt to 180 degrees, so you can do the perfect selfie. It's got intelligent focus across 15 points, beautiful skin mode apparently for a soft effect on all of the skin that it shoots, and it's also got a 5-axis image stabilization system, which is pretty cool. Wireless connectivity as well. Now here's the thing, so you download the Fuji app and the Fuji app will connect to this via your phone, and you can remote trigger it and you can remote alter the settings on it manually as you're going through. I really like this. I looked at all the specs and I was really quite tempted to go and try and find one and have a play with it, because it really does look something that's worth having. And at £499, it's not breaking the bank. It's a really versatile little camera. If you were giving this to someone who was keen on photography as an amateur, a child who was sort of, you know, 13 years old going up to 15 years old, and you said, here you go, here's an interchangeable lens camera, off you go and have a play, I think this would be a great purchase. Really, really good. Most definitely worth the money, worth a look anyway. Sigma have released a 12-24 lens. This is a replacement for the one that they used to do, and I had one of these. I absolutely adored this lens. It was f2.8, and it was f4, and it was 12mm to 24mm. The 9 blades of aperture, 16 elements in 11 groups, which is the same. And I had it from a Canon, and I used it for a very, very long time until I got some gravel in the focus ring on it, and it just ground to a halt, excuse the pun. Would I have it again and use it? Yes, I definitely would. I really enjoyed this lens, and it would be perfect because I got a 24-70, and it would be, the 12-24 would replace my 16-35, which gives you far less in terms of field of view. It's a whopping 1.1 kilos in weight, though, because there's a big piece of glass on the front of that, and it comes in at £1,649. So that is rather expensive. Tamron do a 15-30, which is okay, it's not quite as big, and that's at f2.8 though, so you've got that much more striking depth of field, and it's only £750, so you know it's getting on for more than, or it's more than half price than what you're getting for the first one. So would I buy it? No, I wouldn't. Would I replace my old one with it? No, I wouldn't, not at that price. If you gave it me at £1,000, £1,200, I'd probably take your hand off and have it in my kit before you know it, but not this one. Now, do you like your nighttime photography? Go and shoot some, the Milky Way. Yep, that kind of thing. We went up to Longmynd a few weeks ago and we had a go, and I got a speeding ticket, thanks very much. It was great, but one of the things, even at that area, which is a pseudo dark sky, an educational dark sky spot, then you still get some light pollution. This thing allegedly wipes out that light pollution. It is a square filter, so it'll fit all your existing square filter holders that you've got. It's 85mm or 100mm brand, so depending on which square filter system you got, then just buy the relevant one. But that'll fit probably about 90% of the people that have got a system. And it gets rid of all of the light pollution. So here's a picture taken with a bit of light pollution of a city, and you slip in the Pure filter, and the Pure Night filter gets rid of all of that light pollution and shows you the stars, which is pretty good. Here's another one of the Milky Way with and without, and it's striking. It does make a massive, massive difference. And there's another one with no filter of the Milky Way against some rocks and without. And if I just bounce backwards and forwards between those two, yeah, okay, you're not getting an awful lot more extra, but it's a lot better than just doing a temperature change and taking your Kelvin rating back. Downside, it's $200, $220, sorry, if you want the 85mm, and it's $240 if you want the 100mm. So it's not cheap. If you're into your nighttime photography, then I think this probably would be something that you would look at and probably get an awful lot from. And if you're out on a nightly basis trying to do stuff, then I think it's well worth the money. But for the occasional chance out, I think it's a little bit more of an expense. if they did it as a screw thread filter, then you could buy it for your preferred lens, because I think everyone that does this kind of photography has a preferred lens that they take out, like a 50mm or down to a 24mm or something like that. Then something with a screw thread that would fit in would be worth making, but then they're making lots of variants, I suppose, so the cost goes up. It's a Kickstarter project at the moment, so if you sign up for it, those are the early bird prices, so do expect the price to go up from that point. And if they do, I think they've missed a trick, because I think at the moment I'm struggling to justify why I would buy it, and once it goes beyond 240, I'm just not buying it, plain and simple. So there you go. That was the gear. If you've got any stories, you can send them to us. We'll gladly put them in. Back when she sent us a couple of stories, and she's had them included, so there we go. Muller in the chat room says, why don't you get Hoyer to make one of these? That would be great. Yeah, we'd test that for them. Hoyer, you listening? Mm-hmm. Over 5,000 people have backed the Kickstarter, says Muller as well. Bloody hell, that is good going. So there's people there out there with money that want to spend it on this. I don't want to poo-poo it, because if you're into your nighttime stuff, it will be worth the money. Right then, we've had a load of questions. I think we've got 6 questions to get through today, which is more than normal. So here we go with the questions. Question 1 is from CJ, and he says, any suggestions for Christmas gifts for the passionate amateur photographer for the iPhone and the DSLR? iPhone. Let's do iPhone first. First thing for iPhones is buy those little extension lenses. I've got one little ear one. Here we go. These little clip-on jobs. They are absolutely fantastic. You just get your iPhone, and even if you've got a case on like I have here, you just get them on and line them up. There you go. And away you go. And they'll work on the iPhone 7 as well as working on your old 6 and 6S and that kind of stuff, and Android and all that kind of thing. So you can use them on virtually anything. You get those from £6 on Amazon, and they are well worth every penny, because on Prime, you're getting that for £6. You've got 3 lenses you can own, big wide one, fisheye. You've got a macro lens that comes with it as well. Really, really useful. Yolo do one as well, which has got like a feels like a 200mm lens that screws onto a specific case. I've had a bit of a problem with the thread on that and it ripping off, but that was very, very good. A bit more expensive though, about £30. Holoclip is well worth the money if you spend your money on the Holoclip. They're pretty expensive, but the quality of those is excellent, and they are built to work with each of the cameras. So if you buy one for the iPhone 7, it will work with the iPhone 7. You're not kind of making do. The other thing about is holders. I had one here ready. It's the first time I've ever done preparation, and I've bloody cocked it up, haven't I? It's gone. Where's it gone? It was on here. Oh, I've blown it. That's the one end of it. But I can't find the other end of it. So there you go, just to prove I had done some preparation. There was a bit that screwed on here, and you screwed your iPhone into it, yeah? And it worked really, really well, and it was a nice clamp. No, that's not it. Thanks, mate. But get yourself a holder. Anything like the Glyph, but don't buy the Glyph, because I think the Glyph have lost the plot. I don't think it's a good thing anymore compared to the amount that they're charging. There is a thing called the Rode Grip, R-O-D-E, Rode make mics, but they do a grip for your iPhone that screws into your cold shoe or hot shoe on your camera. Manfrotto do tons of stuff. They do little tiny mini tripods, of which I've got one. I got it free with the bag. And they also do little LEDs that are good for instant lighting, like credit card size lighting units that you can use with your iPhone. And the one thing I would say to everyone to get is a remote triggering system for your iPhone. They're Bluetooth, you just link them up, and then you put your camera as remote, and then when someone walks past, you can take a picture, and you get that element of surprise that comes with it, and that remoteness that then gets spontaneity into your images. Also, I would say get yourself a battery extender. No question, because if you're going out for the day shooting, then you're going to run out of battery pretty swiftly, so that'd be good. £6. Oh, Jesus Christ, Muller. £6 for a fisheye. Bloody hell. DSLR, I think that's tougher. I think that's a lot tougher, because a lot of people that are, you've got to find out how into their photography they are. So someone who's really into it, you're going to struggle to buy them a gift and then not go, oh, yeah, right, thanks, and toss it to one side. Tripods, things like that, always really useful, but you'll probably buy a fairly cheap tripod at around £30 to £50 for someone, and that probably won't be good enough. They won't enjoy it if they're into the photography, and if they're not, then it'll still have some shake and wobble to it, in which case they won't like it after a while. I don't know that there is a good DSLR. Bags, you see, people say, oh, you should buy a bag, but bags are so personal. You know, you love bags or you hate them, definitely. So, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Question two comes from Claire. How can you get a she'll know what I mean as well when she hears that. Claire, here's your question. How can you get a decent picture of a family having dinner at a table? Which sort of angles should you use, etc.? Well, certainly some of the stuff that you've got there from the question with CJ is going to work for you. Buy the Olo clip or buy the little £6 Yonomo lensy, that kind of thing. And also definitely get a remote trigger, because they'll be far easier. You can leave your phone around on the table and shoot and shoot and shoot from wherever you want. Get low down. Get shots up through the cutlery and the glasses and that kind of stuff to get people's faces. Change the perspective. Get a perspective that you can't normally get to with a normal person. If you just sit back there and hold your camera in front of your face, then you're only going to get an image that's exactly what you can see. And if you change the perspective, then you'll get something that is striking and something that everyone else will love, because it's somewhere that they've never stood and looked from, plain and simple. And get people pissed. That's a great one as well, because the pictures will get so much better once they're all shit-faced. Next question comes from Andy. Do standard camera sensors capture ultraviolet and infrared colours as well as the normal human visible colours? If so, is there any way of viewing them? No. There you go, mate. Got that one dealt with. If you thought about it, if the ultraviolet or infrared sensors captured, or if you thought about rather standard sensors capturing that, they'd have to interpret it somehow, and they'd have to make it into something that you'd see on the image, and you wouldn't be able to see it on the image because, I mean, okay, it's a spectrum, isn't it? So it's capturing all of that. But if you talk about the fact the pure infrared spectrum and the pure ultraviolet spectrum, no, it's capturing none of that. It's getting red, green and blue, and that's it. Or it's interpreting red, green and blue effectively from what it sees. You'd also get far better pictures of the sun with digital cameras, which you don't get. You get crap pictures of the sun because the sun is just a white disc. You can't even tell it's spherical. It looks like it's a flat white disc when you take pictures of it, because of that very fact. If you start getting infrared filters and that kind of stuff that really work and help attenuate the light to the correct frequency, you can start to see flares off it and all that kind of thing, which makes it really, really interesting. If you look at all the NASA stuff that's up there, those are completely different sensors that are designed to capture different ranges. Is there a way of viewing it? Of course not, because it's not capturing it. There you go. Question four, not really a question, but would welcome your top three tips for a first-time user of a prime lens, says Drew. And also Mark's added, because this was a question that came up in our Slack channel, Mark's added, I read with interest the topic between you and Ian Lewis about the Yongnuo prime lens, but never really understood if this would be something that would benefit me. So what's a prime lens? A prime lens is something which doesn't do zoom. It is a fixed lens that gives you a specific focal length and you stick with it and that's the end of it. So the Yongnuo one that we're talking about was a 35mm lens. So it's 35mm at a 35mm sensor size, plain and simple. If you then put it on to a crop sensor, then you're going to get a lot more out of it than 35mm. It's going to be probably just over 50mm because you multiply it by 1.6. A full frame will give it at 35. Why do you use prime lenses? Prime lenses get you off your arse, is the long and the short of it. So if you've got a zoom lens, and this is great, you know, say you've got a 70 to 200mm lens, you go to a party, you sit down, you put yourself somewhere that's fairly inconspicuous, and then you just move around the room, zooming in and out and taking pictures of the groups of people, and you get really good candid stuff with that. Well, that's fine, but you never actually move, so you never see different angles or changes. With a prime lens, it makes you get off your butt and you go out and you have to physically go into locations. With prime lenses as well, you don't get any barreling, so the image will be flat, it will look perfect against your sensor, and you won't have any post corrections to do with it. Otherwise, they work exactly the same way as other lenses do. Are they better than a zoom lens? No. They're just different. Like I said, they just get you off your arse and get you to go and do stuff, which is never a bad thing, but it's also a good thing to sit and shoot with the zoom as well. So there isn't a right or wrong on it. The Yongnuo lens that you're talking about, I took it out and used it last week on a job, and I got lens connection errors. So watch out for that. It's a classic one from buying third-party lenses that aren't Canon or Sigma or, you know, the higher brands. I've had it with Tamron lenses as well. You get an error one connection problem. An error one is on Canon is always a connection on one of the, I think it's the first one or the third one, on the connectors for autofocus. All you've got to do is unclip the lens and clip it back in again, but they will get more frequent and eventually you'll end up stopping using the lens. Question six. Oh no, hang on, question five. My question is, what's the best settings to use to take photos of a Christmas tree which is lit, says Dougie. The problem you've got is that, generally speaking, Christmas trees are dark. They're dark green for conifers. And then you will have a bright light, an LED in a lot of cases now, which is extremely bright, which you've then got to balance out against the darkness. And it's impossible to do, really. You're never going to shoot a single picture in a JPEG that's going to work absolutely. HDR setting on your iPhone. The best picture I've got of my Christmas tree has always been taken with my iPhone with the HDR setting turned on, because it boosts the darks and shadows and it tones down the highlights and mid-tones so it looks an awful lot more natural. Shoot it in RAW and then take it into Photoshop and you'll be able to do the same thing to balance it off. And also as well, watch out because a lot of the light that you'll get from Christmas trees makes it very yellow. So you'll need to do a temperature change if you can in Photoshop to bring it more blue back into it to make it look natural, because don't forget the yellows will affect the green, so the green won't look natural. Bring natural greens back by going back to blue in the color spectrum. And last question, your top three essential tips for cold weather photography. Are you ready? This is from Martin. Take a coat, dude. Gloves, hat, coat. There's my top three for cold photography. one of the problems that you get with photography is dew and mist gathering on the lenses. And it's usually to do with the temperature change. You take a perfectly warm camera from indoors and take it outside and all the cold air attracts to it and you'll get a misting up that will cause you a problem. But that'll dissipate after a while. The worst times for weather for photography, and I hate doing videos and stuff in this time of year, is September and March, April. And the reason being, you get more moisture content in the, Jack's in the other room actually, and Jack's the geographer, he couldn't come and explain this properly. But he said, you know, the moisture content in the atmosphere goes up around Britain in those period of times. So you get a very heavy dew in the mornings and evenings. And you can almost guarantee if I'm out on a shift working, I will lose 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening because of the dew point around April and September. It's an awful period of time to go out. Cold weather, it doesn't make a lot of difference. As long as your camera's not boiling up in the house and then you take it straight out into the cold, or you take it out and get it really cold and then bring it straight into the warmth and try and use it and everything condenses on it, you don't have much of a problem. So the bigger thing to do is to keep yourself warm. Get some of those shooter's gloves, you know, the ones where you can just pull your finger, the cover off your finger and just get your trigger finger out and shoot and then pull it back on again and keep warm. Most of the time I spend, if you said to me, what do you do differently in the winter from the summer, Ewan, it's wear a big coat. I've got a big Gore-Tex thing that I put on when I go out that's absolutely fantastic. It's quilted and lined and it's snug as a bug, mate. And if I stick two hand warmers inside, I can be stood there at minus 10 outside with it shivering everywhere and I'm sweating like buckets because it's absolutely brilliant. Really, really nice. Buy a coat, Martin. There we go. That was the questions. If you've got a question, then send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll get it answered. We'll start in the new year on the 6th of January. So get it sent in over the Christmas period and we will get it answered, I promise you. Failing that, we'll see you next year. Have a great Christmas. Really enjoy coming back. I'm so glad we got the photo show and I've got to give a massive thank you to Ian Lewis, because without Ian, the show wouldn't be back. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks where he hasn't been able to help at all. But that's what we worked it out. You know, we're going to kind of yin and yang between the two of us. So thanks, Ian, for that. Made a world of difference to us. See you next year, bright and bushy-tailed with your camera, and we'll take loads of great photos. Au revoir.